Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Arlie Gordon of the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo and Unity Design, and as always, I'm honored to be your host for tonight's very special broadcast. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, author, and educator, Leslie Gist Etheridge, and serves as a weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who with faith and focus are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. And as always, we thank you for calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552. Again, that number is 347-324-5552. So tonight we have a very special show for you, in which we are actually going to be speaking to living history. I believe we have Mr. Dalio on the line with us.
Yes.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. Share with our listeners a little bit more about you, Mr. Dalio, as a historian and as a human being. Dr. Dalio, I apologize.
That's quite all right. Well, over a quarter of a century ago, or more, I think it is now, I started on the path of history. And for a while, I was teaching. And my area of specialty is actually African history. Mm-hmm. And lived in Ethiopia, lived in Kenya for a time, then taught at the College of the Bahamas in the Caribbean. And the University of West Indies was part of that then. And I came back to the United States, taught at a private school in Wilmington, Delaware. And then about 15 years ago, I shifted careers, and now I'm an administrator for the federal courts. But I still continue to follow the African diaspora. And so I've had the good fortune to be able to talk about and write about the Bahamas, African-Americans in Delaware, African-Americans in Canada, some of whom, these Delawareans, joined the Union Navy. Others like Tillman, who we'll talk about tonight, joined the Union Army. So I'm interested in these topics to find out more about the people and deal with them as real people, real persons, choices people made, actions they took, how they and their families cope with the consequences of those decisions. And for the
Can I ask a question,
sure.
Doctor? from my perspective, and I'm not a historian, but I am certainly interested in our history and heritage and culture, do you find that what we do get, the little bit, I would suspect, that mainstream America gets through our traditional educational system, when it comes to African American history and or black history, is watered down not just in terms of the quantity with which it's told and taught, but also the quality in terms of digging a little bit deeper and sharing more details about our history with students and society.
I think that was more typical of the last century. I earned my PhD in 1975, so I've been at this for quite a while, teaching about black history, if you want to call it that. I know of others who've done it, and the most recent material I've been involved in is with the Underground Railroad. And I think there's been a resurgence in that area, actually. Now, how much is getting out is another question, but there's certainly a lot of research and writing and public presentations about that than there used to be.
Okay. Again, I do agree with you. I know that it seems to have been an increase in terms of the research and henceforth the knowledge that we are uncovering about the Underground Railroad. It seems to be a little bit more in our consciousness as a people. But again, are we passing that on to our children or even our communities on a grander, broader scale? Are there initiatives in place with which to share this very informative, uplifting information with those who can benefit it from the most?
Again, I would say yes, there's more than there used to be. And one of the other changes that's taken place is, of course, the Internet. The availability of material on the Internet or something like this even this evening where you call into a radio show and it's streamed out to people. So the Tillman material, for example, the Delaware Historical Society and the Underground Railroad Coalition in Delaware provided a forum for me to present material about Mr. Tillman. I just think more of that is available than there used to be.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. That is in itself inspiring, and I'm grateful for the work of people like you who are bringing the past to life. Let's get right into the sharing of John W. Tillman, who I believe is going to be the focus of our online discussion and our radio show tonight.
Sure, that would be good. I'll try to be brief. Mr. Tillman was born in 1830 in Kent County, Delaware. A descendant of Native Americans and African ancestors. He was enslaved under a series of abusive owners, and at least two of the Tillmans, John and his mother, separately opted for self-emancipation. And in John's case, liberty required two attempts, the second of which occurred in 1850 and led him to blacks and whites, some of whom were Underground Railroad activists and others who were not, in Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. And then he spends about the next dozen years in southern Chester County and neighboring counties, establishing himself as an agricultural laborer. And he lived among supportive whites and free blacks, some of whom were fellow freedom seekers. He moves around frequently to find work and to avoid unwanted attention from slave catchers and kidnappers. Because, you know,
Where is southern Chester County, just for my own knowledge?
A lot of different places, near Kennett Square and West Vincent and Marlboro and London Grove and Lyonville. And so there are a number of Quakers who help him, but not just Quakers. On his way into Pennsylvania, he goes to Wilmington, Delaware, and he asks for, so he already knew he was looking for an Underground Railroad agent named Benjamin Medford, who was an African-American, who in turn was hooked into the Thomas Garrett Network, and they're the ones who get him into Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't just stay in Chester County. He moves to Norristown at one point, Philadelphia. He comes back to Chester County, gets married, and begins a family. But threats in the late 1850s in the form of slave catchers come to his immediate area, And he's really scared. So what he does, he moves to New Jersey. He goes to Gloucester County, New Jersey. Little Gloucester was a community of free blacks there that they had some numbers. So you didn't see slave catchers as frequently there. And in 1862, he returns to Pennsylvania with his wife, Margaret, and by then he has a son, Charles. After that, he gets into the Civil War. Do you want to talk a little bit about the self-emancipated side of things, or would you prefer to talk about his experience with enslavement?
Whatever you think would be of most interest to our listening audience, I'm going to leave that up to your discretion.
Okay, let's deal a little bit with the enslavement. He's going to have three owners, the second of which is a man named George Cummins. And George Cummins buys his mother, his older brother George, and him. And he says that we were put up on the block and sold like horses and cattle. So every now and then you see some reflection on what he's written in his narrative. He starts as a field worker there, later becomes a waiter in the house. But then life changes for him while working for Cummins because his mother sold off to yet another enslaver. His brother sold off to an enslaver, and he's put out to work for a foreman on the Cummins farm, which is near Smyrna, Delaware, if you know where that area is. And then because his master loses a bet with someone else, he's sold to a different owner, a man named William Rothwell. But what he writes about is not so much the physical abuse that he faces, and he faced all manner of physical abuse, beatings, whippings. He was underfed, insufficient clothing, poor housing, those sorts of things. He refers to the psychological pressure this put on a family. And what historians will tell you today is that the enslaved feared more than anything else being separated from other family members because it was such a common thing.
Right.
And so this is what he says after the war. He said, "Our past condition of life, which the colored people had to undergo, was the worst thing you could face. It caused much scattering among us and changes of name. We could live here and within common distance of each other and travel close by and not know where our people lived." So he stresses that as an important part of his life. And you could certainly read about in his narrative some of the physical abuse that occurred too.
That was one of my questions, Dr. Dalio. If someone wanted to reference or refer to these writings, where would they be able to do so?
There are two copies of his narrative in print. One is at the Chester County Historical Society in Westchester, and the other is at the Delaware Historical Society in Wilmington, Delaware.
Okay. So this isn't a published work. Go ahead.
It was something that was printed privately, and only two copies have survived that we know of.
Fascinating.
But the Delaware Historical Society and I we're working on probably getting something like an annotated copy out in publication, but that will take a couple of years. It's only about 32, 33 pages long, but it's chock full of really good information.
Right, and this is exactly coming from the source's mouth versus, again, more of the tin cans and strings piecing together, if you will.
Right, and it's coming from a man who went through this.
That's right.
It looks like he didn't write it himself. It looks like he talked to his son Charles about it, and Charles, around 1896, produced the private printing of this narrative.
Okay, and I want to share with our listeners that you can see some wonderful illustratives that correlate to this conversation, if you will, or associated with our guest in this story on www.blogtalkradio.com/TheAntiqueE Show. And Leslie always does such a wonderful job of posting visuals and graphics that support each show. So, again, I encourage you to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/TheAntiqueE Show. And Dr. Dalio, I'll let you continue.
Okay, let me talk a little bit about him as a freedom seeker, because his biographical sketch is representative of the current interpretation of the self-emancipated. Instead of calling them fugitive slaves, now we're learning to call them freedom seekers or self-emancipated, because indeed a lot of these people just chose to get up and leave. And they should get credit for it, because they were often organized, they were certainly determined, and they were able to adjust to events. So, you know, you start off in one direction, and then you just, whatever happens on the ground, you have to react to, and you do it. It illustrates the support of blacks and whites in Delaware, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. Some are Underground Railroad agents or connected to it, and others are not. Some blacks and whites were helpful. They sheltered people. They gave them jobs. They helped their families. They helped them build communities. Other blacks and whites were not. They were a hindrance to them. There were some people, and including African Americans, who betrayed some of these people trying to get away. Certainly, there were more.
And you know,
whites
you speak to that. And you speak to Dr. Dalio a point that I think needs to be focused on in our conversation. You know, too many times I think that we make it simply a black and white thing, and that during this period, all black people were slaves and fighting for emancipation, that all black people were good and a part of this progress, if you will. And at the same time, I think that in our consciousness as a country, we always equate that most, if not all, of the white people were slave masters. And when that's far from the truth, that, as you already suggested, many white people actually were a part of the Underground Railroad and its mission to free slaves, and or independently did what they could for the betterment of those who were fighting for freedom.
Right. That's a very good point to make. But it is important to stress, I think, the fact that these people, many of them were self-emancipated, and also they received a lot of help from the free black communities that they encountered as they went along. And, of course, those people would be Methodists. So you're looking for, in this part of the country, coming out of Delaware, you're looking for, and in Delaware, even though it was a slave state, there are a lot of people helping them, you're looking for a free black community, the African-American churches, the Spencer churches, the Allen churches, a Quaker meeting house, and things like that. And Tillman's narrative does give you that information, that that's what's happening to him. So as he gets into Pennsylvania and southern Chester County, people would say, well, my goodness, it seems like they're all Quakers. Well, there certainly were a lot of Quakers, and that's where they were. So they were helping them get through. But there are also members of the free black community, and that's what I'm trying to track down more to see. In the 1850 census, if you have two Quakers living near one another and there's a free black person or family in between them, then what's the likelihood of they having helped them? And in the William Still book, The Underground Railroad, and in the Robert C. Smedley book on the history of Chester and neighboring counties of Pennsylvania, show that there was that kind of cooperation going on.
And also, I know that based on past shows that the church, again, as you mentioned, played a major role in the Underground Railroad more often than not, and the freeing of slaves.
And again, just to show the kind of democracy we lived in then and now, there were some African Americans complaining that the churches weren't doing enough. So, you know, they felt more could have been done in some cases.
Sure. Well, and looks like we've come full circle in that realm too. So that's for another conversation. Okay, let's continue on the voyage to self-emancipation.
Well, he gets into southern Chester County, and if you're familiar with Still or Smedley, he's taken in by a number of families and moved along quickly. And again, I mentioned that was because he needed to find work, but he also had to stay away from kidnappers who, you know, Maryland was not very far from the border. I think, what is it, like 8 or 10 miles, 20 miles from Kennett Square in that particular area. So they were coming in and actually kidnapping people. They kidnapped free blacks if they could, too. They didn't care if you were enslaved or if you were free. They take you and you end up in a slave pen in Baltimore and you'd be sold off to the South from there. But he avoided that by moving around a lot. And then also he, in his book, he says, I always kept my door well barred. We also kept ourselves well armed. And he mentions two instances, one in 1857 and one in 1859, when whites come into the area. They're strangers, they're unknowns. One even comes to the door of his house and knocks and asks if he's there. His wife denies it. And then apparently they went away, but the people in the neighborhood didn't know that, and they went out armed and looking for them but couldn't find anybody. In 1859, this is one of Tillman's approaches. He has a kind of understated approach. He mentions another excitement of unwanted visitors. And they actually end up firing guns and opening the door and firing another volley at night. But again, they didn't find anybody when they checked the next morning. But that's when he moved to New Jersey, because of that sort of thing. But by the time of just before the outbreak of the Civil War, he's pretty settled at that point. And if we have time, I'd like to talk briefly about his Civil War experience.
Yes, let's just let our listeners know that you are listening to The Gist of Freedom is Faith. We air every Sunday evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And tonight's very special guest is Dr. John DeLeo. Did I pronounce your last name properly, or is it Dalio? I said it both ways.
It's Peter Dalio.
Okay, Peter Dalio. I'm sorry, I called you John.
Right,
I'm
okay.
Sorry. And we are talking about the life of John W. Tillman and his experiences seeking self-emancipation through the Underground Railroad, but even beyond that, because I think we're going to get now into the Civil War period, when he begins to reconnect with members of his family, correct?
Right, right. Well, after the Civil War, he'll do that. But during the Civil War, and again, this understatement he has, my war life was like the rest of our comrades, very rugged. He doesn't say much else about it, but fortunately at the National Archives, there are petitions for pensions for veterans of that war, and you pick up a lot of the detail. So he joins the 127th U.S. Colored Troop in 1864, trains at Fort William Penn in Philadelphia. They're engaged in a number of situations outside of Petersburg and Richmond, Virginia. But I can't find out if he was actually in battles or anything like that yet. He does get hurt. He's on the march, and some of his comrades tramp on him, was the term used. And thereafter, he has a lot of trouble breathing and spitting up blood. And some others of his fellows had to carry his gun at times, and sometimes he couldn't even march. Then in late 1864, he accidentally discharges his gun and wounds himself. And then he's moved into a series of hospitals in Virginia and then up in New York. And then he ends up in a smallpox quarantine hospital in New York. And after that, he's discharged from the Army, and he goes back to his wife in Chester County. So for him, it was a very brief but dangerous episode. But he emerges alive. And the piece I like the most about it is his reflection on it afterwards, because it gave him a sense of security after the war. He says, quote, "The time for slaveholders hunting for me and my race and laying claims to me was done with now." So that whole thing about, yeah, he self-emancipated, was free, was working with people who supported him, but with those slave catchers and kidnappers coming around, I guess he never really had a sense of security or felt comfortable with what was going on.
Mm. So, and how old would you say he was at this point?
Okay, so he was born in 1830, around 1830, so this would be 1865, 1866, he's reflecting.
Okay, so 35 or so.
Yeah.
Okay, fascinating. And now, was it at this point that he reconnected with family members, Peter?
Yes. He starts looking for his family members. He's located in a good spot in southern Chesterton County there. He finds his mother in 1876. She also was a freedom seeker. We don't know. We don't even know her name. Mm. But we know she was a freedom seeker because he mentions that she had run away 40 years before he finds her, which would have been about 1836 when he was a kid, but they had separate owners at that point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he says about this, I also had the pleasure of having my mother visit me at my home, and we had a joyful time there together. It certainly was a comfort to us both to know that we were in the land of freedom, where we could talk about the past and enjoy the present, and where peace abounds. So he has a good 9-10 years with her before she dies. And then he goes to other parts of the area and finds a brother in Delaware near Friendship, which is down in Sussex County. He finds a brother in Franklinville, New Jersey. He finds a sister in Wilmington. And then he has many aunts living in Wilmington. So here's a person who was disturbed when he was enslaved for fear that the family was going to be broken up, and it was. And after the war, he really searches hard to find family members he can pull together.
Fascinating. And do we have any idea of how many brothers and sisters, siblings that he had?
I'm still doing the census work on that. So the ones I mentioned are the only ones I know, and I don't know. But as an aside, his grandmother, who was the American Indian, Native American, I should say, he writes that she had 24 children. So apparently he had a lot of relatives.
Okay, fascinating. And we have about 5 minutes left, and so what other things relative to John Tillman or your research would you like to discuss for this last 5 minutes?
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Tillman. And in between the Civil War and searching for his relatives, he also was very interested in equality. And so he mentions specifically the 15th Amendment, saying after he came home from the war, not having the right to vote bothered people like him. And then he says, a new light sprang up within me when I had learned about the 15th Amendment, and it gave we colored people a right to vote and to have a legal claim to be free in the United States, citizens in the United States, and to enjoy the privileges which we as men of color earned on the battlefield and my ancestors earned of these rights with labor and hardships before me, of which I am more than proud. So
what year was this?
The 15th Amendment was 1870, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
No, so this it was something that resonated with a lot of these people who had gone to war and come back, and they didn't have the right to vote. And
that's
he
right.
Mentions it. And let me mention one other one from one of the sailors that I when I was doing work on the African American Delawareans who went into the Union Navy, a man named Peter S. Blake, who was a barber, and then he worked as what was called a wardroom boy. So he was waiting on the officers aboard this ironclad vessel, the Patapsco. Mm. And he's writing after the war and says, all we wish to be is to be treated as faithful soldiers, no additional thanks. All we wish is to be dealt with more like men than wild beasts. So he's a little more tense about the situation than Tillman was. But you can hear the same thing coming through. We just want to be considered equal and treated as equals.
Fascinating. Okay, we have about 2 minutes left, Peter. So let's wrap up at least the life and times of John Tillman as we know them today. We need to highlight the bullet points, if you will. We can certainly do that. And we'd certainly welcome you back on a future show to cover anything that we may have missed along the way, along our journey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That would be great. Do you want me to wrap up? Or?
Yeah. But we got about 2 minutes left. So what else would you like to share about the life of Mr. Tillman?
Well, just to pull it together, if you read his narrative, you get the chance, if this ever gets into print or you can go to the historical societies, it's good for the psychological and the physical difficulties for the enslaved. It's very good for showing the determination of the self-emancipated, and more seriously, the problems after they were self-emancipated because of the kidnappers. It gives you a little bit about not so much the fighting in the Civil War, but the importance of what it was to him, and of course, as an individual, the difficulties he faced in the Civil War. And after the Civil War, I think it shows the how secure, how much more secure these African Americans felt than they did before the war because of slavery. And it also shows their interest in equality. And what I very much enjoyed was the piece where he really went and put a great deal of effort into searching and finding family members.
Fascinating. Well, I wanted to personally thank you for being our guest again. I think you and I have had been on the same show before. I think the work that you're doing is very meaningful. I think it brings a lot more of history that has gone buried too long to light, and we appreciate you in that capacity, and we welcome you back to an upcoming show so that we can continue to talk about some of your valuable research.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
you're welcome,
the
Dr. Dalio. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye. And in closing, let us always remember the spirit of our greatness as highlighted by our guest tonight and as highlighted by those who built the way for us and in many ways still live within us. We hope that we help to reawaken your strength and passion in their honor and your conviction to make Black history every day. Thank you. You've been listening to The Gist of Freedom is Faith. We hope that you enjoyed the show, and we encourage you to tune in next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, for our next installment of The Gist of Freedom is Faith. Thank you. God bless.